Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to A Man's Voice. This is Frank McKinney, and I'm standing in this evening for our host, our normal host, which is David Shorter, who, by the way, is being honored this evening. So I'll let him tell us about that next week when he's back. Next week we are going to have a show. We've got two medical doctors that will be on, and they'll be talking about men's health. So stay tuned today and stay tuned next week. How are you guys all doing?
Oh,
great.
We're doing wonderful.
Great.
Loving life.
Great. Were there any topics this week or in the past weeks that you had an interest to discuss this evening?
Go for it, Jeremy.
Well,
Jeremiah.
You know, I would like to talk about a little bit about the NBA playoffs and, you know, LeBron James, he has arisen and he's playing really good and stuff like that. Just some sport talk.
Yeah. So who are you rooting for?
Unfortunately, my Miami Heat is actually, they're out of the playoffs now.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm open. I like to see whoever is playing the best that day, you know, and let's just say the Cleveland series, LeBron is playing really good, even though he doesn't have a better or best supporting class like he's used to. He has arisen to the occasion, and he's taking his team by lead.
Yeah, that's something I can agree to. I've actually cited a few of his games that he's closed them out in the last seconds, 5 point seconds, 8 seconds. And I remember when he first started playing, he couldn't do that or wouldn't do that or wouldn't step up to that. But he's been closing them out with last-second baskets that have won the game for him. Yeah. He's quite an accomplished player. I certainly have to recognize that.
And that's something I like that he stepped up, because that's something all of us critics, everybody would question, because – we've seen you do it with a great supporting cast, but let's see how you do it without a great supporting cast, which is important. And, you know, he's being compared to Jordan and other great players, and that's something that everybody can see, that he's accomplishing himself and his team right now. And then also I can look at OKC, and I'm very disappointed with all the stars they have on that team, and they're pretty much going nowhere. It's surprising.
Yes. Yeah, are you familiar with this called the Euro step?
No, I'm not.
Is anybody online that's familiar with the Euro step?
Yes, the Euro step is a move really brought into the league by Manu Ginobili of the Spurs. It's a two-step move that you use to go to the basket to make a layup. James Harden, Dwayne Wade made it famous. As far as the league, but Dwayne Wade and James Harden uses a lot of Euro step.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I've heard it mentioned on TV. I actually looked it up myself as well because I was curious about that. Any more commentary on basketball?
Well, what is that Euro step then tend to do differently than a power drive to the basket? Is it a sidestep? What does it do?
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say it's a change of direction move. You step with your left, and then you come back with your right. So it's like a left-right motion instead of a power to the move, power to the basket. You still go forward, taking your two steps. It's more a left-right to change your direction, or from right to left, move the ball from right to left. And then
yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah, the Europeans contributed that to the NBA, that particular move. So, and you'll hear it mentioned a few times during the games because a guy will end up doing something like that. I also looked up traveling. Are you any familiar with the word traveling in basketball?
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that a kind of a joke nowadays with them going to the hoop?
Jeez.
Oh.
they take like five steps before they dribble.
Ah, I'm thinking something like that too. At least three.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be two steps, but it's more like 10 steps now.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I thought we'd bring. I thought, yeah, that would be a good thing because I wanted to see I wanted to look up to see how many steps were actually authorized. And supposedly, supposedly there's two steps authorized, but you can get three steps out of it if you got the ball in your head. But I'm watching these guys go do these. You know, we used to do layups, You basically hit off of one foot. And you bounce off the other, and you have to play the ball up or shoot.
I hear if you have a plane ticket on the way to the basket, it's okay.
Yeah, oh, that's good. I'm gonna remember that one. A plane. Yeah. So, any more comments about basketball? Okay. How about since we're sports and everything, I just wanted to comment on Miami. Dwayne Wade, I was looking at a show this past week where he's considered a model person. One of the other people have modeled themselves after his behavior. And so he came and honored a person. Oh, it was the person that saved the people at the – they had the shooting the last couple of weeks where the gentleman who decided to preserve life in there by crashing through the door and getting the gunman, his favorite person is Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade came on a show and surprised him. And that gentleman, by the way, that did all the life saving is providing funds for the burial of the people that got killed through the GoFundMe page.
Yes, that was very nice, and it made me think of one other nice gesture. May I share it?
Please.
The two gentlemen that were not respected well enough or appropriately handled at the Starbucks, you heard what they're going to do, didn't you?
Yes, I did, but go ahead.
They settled. You know, everybody's too crazy nowadays. The two gentlemen settled and said, we just want a dollar to make it legal, and we want all the other money. They're generating a fund to go towards a worthy cause. And, Frank, what was the cause again? I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden on what the cause was, but it was a good one.
Okay, one of them is a business cause. There's two people that are paying them money, the city as well as Starbucks. And
yes.
One of them is going for business funds.
It's like $250,000.
Yes.
And I just thought it was a very nice gesture on the behalf of those men that were not treated respectfully, and not to lash out, but to show by good example, this is how you're supposed to behave. I thought that was great.
Good. Yes, I did too. I thought that Starbucks did a pretty good job of paying attention to the matter early on instead of letting it fester. And also, of course, they're going to close down a large number of their Starbucks to do training.
Yes.
So that people will have a different attitude when they engage the customer.
In today's environment, I just thought it was a refreshing thing to hear.
Right. Everybody online, are you aware of what happened at Starbucks?
Yeah, I'm aware.
Jeremiah, you're aware of what happened at Starbucks?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. The how about this week and the president's communications when he was flying to the NRA convention? Are you aware that he indicated that he criticized France and he criticized England in regard to England for the, or UK, United Kingdom for the stabbing, and the French for the 130 people that got lost in the terrorist episodes that they had in the last year or 2 years?
No, I didn't. I didn't hear the details on that.
I didn't hear anything either.
Okay, so he basically gave a speech to the NRA convention and used terminology like pop, 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 basically saying that he's going to defend the Second Reich in the United States, and that he basically said that the people in those two countries, their leadership, was not very good at saving people's lives. And in the UK, for instance, that there's just a tremendous number of people that are in the hospital from stabbing. Go ahead.
I was going to say I hadn't heard that. The most ridiculous comment that I've heard all day, because God knows how many stabbings we have going on in this country. The only thing is, we don't really hear about them because we've got so many more shootings. At least I think this is why. We've got so many more shootings. I mean, I've got the news going on in the background here in Miami, and all they're talking about is, you know, deadly shooting here, deadly shooting there. So, of course, that's going to take precedence over stabbings. But I'm sure that there's lots of stabbings that go on here that we don't even hear about. So it's just a violent society. So for him to say that, I think is a joke, really.
Well, that's essentially how it was taken by the French president and the United Kingdom leader, prime minister. They criticized the president and his actions in regard to his comments in that regard. And the previous president of France basically is come on the air to specifically just say that's a crock of a bull. You know, that the facts that the president put out are not accurate. And so do you think that are we all Second Rights Amendment people that think that everybody has the right to have a gun?
No, not everybody. We need guidance. We need rules. We need regulations. We're a gun society, whether some people like it or not. And with that needs to be a certain level of responsibility that maybe has to change and get tighter or more in tune with today's environment. But I really don't see, at least in my lifetime, that guns will be totally taken out of all law-abiding citizens. You can agree with it or not agree with it, but I do agree that we need to have the appropriate amount of regulation so that things can be as safe as possible with gun ownership.
Are you aware that Virginia is considered one of the states that's attributable to illegal gun activity in Washington, D.C., or New York, or New Jersey, and some other southern states as well?
And they're what are they doing, Frank?
Well, supposedly we have so many guns that we're so much looser, for instance, in New Jersey or New York, that people transport the guns from our state and other southern states. I think Georgia is another state. and bring them into their places, and they're unregistered weapons.
No,
I wasn't
on
that.
Yeah, we're considered part of the problem.
We mean
the United States or
the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, when I first came to Virginia, well, let's say 25 years ago, one of our legislators discharged his weapon inside the chambers. So we had legislators at that time that would come in packing into the halls, and this person was at his desk ready to take a vote and discharge the weapon. The place isn't that big.
And we just had a situation here, Frank, just yesterday in Michigan, where a officer that was at a high school game, you know, to monitor and to watch over the crowd, accidentally discharged him into the basketball floor during the game, and the whole place
scattered.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, it's an accident, but still, you tend to start thinking, if we have to have this, isn't there a more I don't want. Maybe it is control. Isn't there a better way to control the situation if we have to have it or certain people need to have it? But, yeah, that's a little scary.
Yeah. I was looking at the stats in England and the United Kingdom. They also have weapons, but most of the weapons they have are shotguns. And you can have a different type of weapon, but you have to justify it. And I think the authorities should justify it to the police. Spencer, we have a nice echo.
You would think, Frank, I've got a question to pose to all of us. You would think with the technology that probably already exists, don't we have, for lack of a proper term, stun creating ammunition and stun guns and just rubber bullets that could knock an elephant over but not kill them, that we could have certain things that aren't lethal but basically incapacitate people for the moment? Or is that just a wish list and not a reality?
I think the problem with that is that when you're facing a gun, like if somebody were pointing a gun at me and I thought my life was going to end in the next split second, I'd want to make sure that if I were to shoot first, that I would take that person out
right.
And not give them an opportunity to take me out first.
No, that's what I said. Is there something almost as lethal as ending somebody's life, but not? And maybe that there isn't such a thing.
Well, I think that the answer to that you just received is probably what's happening, because they have the equipment to do that, to do what you indicate. But the problem is whether you feel like your own life is threatened. And that it will do the job.
Power. Yep.
So, yeah, it's like this lion, I'm sure you all saw on the news, in some private park, I think it was in South Africa, that was charging the owner and actually drugged the owner and was, you know, chewing on the owner, but... and he was probably playing, but the decision was made to shoot the tiger and shoot it dead instead of tranquilize it, because, you know, tranquilizer probably takes a few seconds, and a lot of things can happen in a few seconds. So,
yeah.
You know, if you shoot a tranquilizer at a person charging at you or much worse, with a gun, you know, they still have an opportunity to cause a lot of damage.
And you don't want to be the chew toy for a lion or a tiger.
I don't.
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, that's a little too big animals.
Yeah.
So on these weapons that we've been talking about, what do you all think about the NRA?
I personally don't know much about the NRA, but when I apologize right off the bat if I offend some people, but this is just my sentiment and the way I feel, is when I think of the NRA, I think of a bunch of, I shouldn't say bunch because that automatically makes it sound negative, but I think of people that don't have and again, I apologize if I offend anybody, but that don't have a high level of education, that are usually people that live in the country and not city dwellers. And, you know, it basically reminds me of actually part of my family from my dad's side from Kentucky. I bet every single one of them was an NRA member. You know, and I apologize again, but that's the way I see it.
Yeah, I understand that. Any other comments?
Well, I agree with Ron. In any group of the size of the NRA, you could pick another kind of group that either carries a cause or carries a weapon. You're going to have different people that either abuse that weapon, abuse that cause, or respect it properly. I've seen more of the responsible control of guns than the irresponsible. But I know they both exist because you can just look all over the place and find examples of both. And I do think, whether you like the NRA or not, I don't tend to demonize any group unless I know enough about all aspects of it or as much as I can know about it to do that. But I would agree, Ron, that there's good and bad in that organization too, and they're playing with weaponry, and that's something that's not very forgiving.
Yeah, I just, in my mind, and I could be completely off base here, but in my mind, I don't see a lot of Harvard and Yale graduates, you know, attending NRA meetings. I could be completely wrong. Yeah. But I don't think I am.
Well, you go. I'll give you a quick example. If you go to shooting competition clubs, competition, hunting, a lot of hunting venues that are on the upper scale of things, hunt clubs. There's a variety of venues where you see just the opposite, but that's not, as I said several times, that doesn't mean that you don't have good and bad in a lot of organizations. There's included.
Well, that's a good point.
Did you all hear about the congressman that attended his town hall meeting and took his gun out and laid it on the table?
No. What's that all about?
Well, I was looking that up. What you can see it on the internet. Basically, he said he's not a Gabby Gifford type of person, so he's not going to show up at one of these town hall meetings and let you fire at him with a weapon without him returning fire to you. So that's what he did. He took the weapon out, put it on the table while he was speaking to his audience.
But
was that
okay, Craig?
Excuse me?
Was that in Texas, Frank?
I didn't hear you. I couldn't hear what you said.
I was asking if that occurred in Texas.
No, I think it did not. I don't think it did. I think it's either in Virginia. It may have been in Virginia. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me take that as an example. As soon as you said that, I thought of something. You wonder if somebody does that, walks in, has a right to have a gun there, whatever, takes it out of his holster, sets it on the table. is that person trying to just tintillate and make people nervous? That's a wrong move if that's true. That's not what you should do. So, but he may have had another motive. I don't know the story, but it raises the question in my mind, why do you have to take it out, put it on the counter, and make everybody go, oh, my gosh. I mean, what's the purpose in that? I don't see that.
Why do you have to do that?
Now, were you guys aware of this situation in Hawaii with the volcano?
The
earthquake?
It's eaten up, about a dozen houses already?
I think you're right about that. And it's not where the location, the ground is open in a given area away from the actual volcanic site. And it's now fire is coming out of the ground, et cetera. And, yes, it's in the neighborhood on the Big Island.
Yeah. Is that the island on Hawaii?
Yes.
I also heard that they're doing a major evacuation now of not just that neighborhood, but the whole area.
That's right. I understand, too. The National Guard was called in the other day. And no one can predict and should not be able to predict, you know, where there's one side of the island that is happening on, and the other side is basically stable right now. So there is an evacuation. I don't know where the people are going to, whether they're going to the other side of the island or off the island completely. But the National Guard is there.
Yes. And I can tell you, gentlemen, from one experience I had years ago, I was within probably 400 yards. Four football fields. The heat, the roar, and the shaking of the ground enough to make anybody drop to their knees. It was serious to be. And I was supposedly a safe distance away. I wasn't there very long, and I have no intention of going back to visit one.
Yeah, I can believe you on that.
It was very scary.
How about Senator McCain?
Yeah, he I don't like what he's saying. He makes it sound like he's about to be done, which is sad, but he wants President Obama to do his eulogy. Did you hear that?
He wants Bush, and he wants two speakers. Pence can attend. The current president cannot, and Obama will be the first speaker, and Bush will be the second speaker. Go ahead.
Go ahead, finish.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing to me on that was I had a friend that didn't know if he wanted – he was a priest, and he didn't know whether he wanted to have the bishop attend his funeral. And the bishop told him – he came to a change of mind and said, you know, I think it's all right for you to attend my funeral. And the bishop said, hey, laughed and said, that's great because I was coming anyway. So I thought about that every time that McCain doesn't want the president, but the president might decide to come, and then again he may decide to be a gentleman and not come as he did with the recent funeral for the mother of the 43rd president, Mrs. Bush, Barbara Bush's funeral. You're aware that the president did not attend that, right?
No. He sent the first lady.
That's right. Sent the first lady, and she sat next to President Obama, and they got along really exceedingly well with smiles and big smiles and everything else. So, and they took a group picture together.
I saw that.
They took a group picture. So But, you know, I want to tell you that John McCain is definitely an American hero. And so that's by any definition of people. When I was a young person, I served on strategic submarines. The one I served on at first was Patrick Henry. So when you read Patrick Henry, the George C. Marshall ships I was on, John C. Calhoun, and you kind of get into that because you're assigned to those places. So if you don't know much about history, you certainly know about that history and that time. I also worked for John McCain's father in Hawaii. His father was a four-star admiral, and his father was an admiral. So, you know, John McCain has done some crazy things because he's an aviator, possibly because he's a naval aviator, but he was a prisoner of war for 5.5 years. I had another friend of mine who was a retired admiral, three-star, who was also a prisoner of war at the same time. And they beat the hell out of these guys. So not only did he spend 5.5 years in prison, but you jump out of an airplane where something is broken, something, and they don't repair the broken part in your body. You basically are laid out in a stretcher with a blanket over you with no clothing, and they're still torturing you when they call you in on a daily basis to get information from you. And you're not divulging the information that they want to hear. So that's why if you look at John McCain, he could not lift one side of his arm. He could not lift it any higher than his shoulder. My friend's leg was twisted all the way to sideways. So instead of it being front, it went to the left. And that's how he was enabled by them or disabled by them. So any other comments on John McCain?
Yeah, there's a gentleman that I was just introduced to last year, Colonel Tom Moe, up here in the Midwest. And he's in the upper part of Ohio or Indiana where he lives. He was in prison camp, the same camp at the same time John McCain was there. He wasn't with John McCain. He knew of him, and his account, the only reason I bring that up, his accounting, I don't know how he finds the courage to talk about it, but he on occasion, not all the time, but on occasion, will sit down and talk about what went on, and it's just, I haven't heard all of it. I've only heard a few tidbits about it, but it just, you know, your jaw drops to the floor. We have no concept of what goes on in those war camps. I sure don't.
Well, let me say this. I used to handle all the secret and above information that came into the command. We were Pacific Command, so we supported Nixon when he was the president, and they offered to release John McCain from prison, but he wouldn't. He would not accept.
Didn't he refuse?
Yeah. He did refuse because he knew that would look like, because his daddy was the senior person in the Pacific.
Yeah,
basically the MacArthur in the Pacific, and he knew that would just ruin everybody's morale. It'd be favoritism because of who his father was. So he refused and stayed in there and took a beating every day.
Well, I don't think very many people will disagree that he's an American hero. Probably not even President Trump, but I'm concerned about it. He doesn't look like he's doing bad, but when you start hearing about those kinds of preparations, you wonder, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, my understanding is that he has brain cancer the same as Bo Biden's, same as Bo Biden had. So, Yeah, so the news reports are is that, you know, he's asking people like his son-in-law to take care of his daughter, and I guess he doesn't expect, you know, he doesn't expect to make it till next year at this time. That's mm-hmm. what he's thinking, okay? So he's not a guy that's looking for you to come and give him well wishes or anything, because he's a pretty tough guy. You know, guys that fly, let me just say this. I was in Vietnam before it was a war, okay? and I had quite an education from the people I was with just being there, stuff that I did not know that I learned on the run, okay? And when you take an – I think he was flying A-4 aircraft. So you basically dive that thing from the air and drop your ordnance as low as you possibly can. You got shot down that way. And then you're landing on an aircraft carrier. These are not the current new ones. These are shorter decks, you know. And you're working in the jungles. The heat is just extreme. Rains, bad weathers. And then you're being treated with unkindness from the North Vietnamese. So, you know, my hat's off to him, always has been off to him. And I just wanted to celebrate that fact this evening with you guys by bringing that up. Have you all heard about the census and citizenship question?
What's the latest? What's the latest one?
Well, they say that there's a court action. You know, there's a lot of court actions involving the current administration. So one of the court actions is dealing with the census because they want to ask a question on there: are you a citizen of the United States or what country you are? And there's a California is suing to not have that question on the census. So there's a big argument about what relevance does that have, that question have to the census. And so some of you might want to look up what the purpose of the census is, but the people in California and other places are saying that it's not to determine whether you're a citizen or not. It's basically to determine how many people are resident in a given area. So the long and the short on that is that if you have that question on the census from then you stand to lose representation in the Congress if you come from a state that has a large immigrant population.
Because of the fear factor?
Also, yeah, it will also affect your funding. So if you hypothetically look at that, you could have 1 million people, let's say, in a given section of California, but maybe 800,000 of them are people. In other words, people won't answer the census because of that question, and so you won't get a true census take. And so as a result of that, you'll have lesser people, and you may lose a congressional person as well as funding, but yet still have to, you know, pay for their schooling, et cetera, those people that reside there.
I thought that's happening already, especially in places like here in Florida. You know, I'm sure that there's a lot of people that don't respond to you know, the census, because there's a lot of people here that are not here legally, just like, you know, states like Texas and California.
Right.
So I thought that, I thought that's been going on for decades, really.
Yes. Yeah. I think this is an extension of that, because basically they were trying to get people to fill out the census, whether or not they are citizens or not, so they can determine what funding, federal funding, and that should be in that area, and how many congressional representatives. So you can be a congressional representative, but it doesn't have to do with you being a U.S. citizen. It doesn't necessarily correlate to you should only have representatives based on citizens. You have representatives based on people, even though they can't vote. So that's the way that's shaking out.
And I just heard today that there's a couple of states, I think, forgive me, I can't cite to you which one or two it is, that want to give the rights to vote to 16-year-olds now. Did you hear that?
I didn't.
Yeah, I just heard that this morning. And they're trying to pass legislation in their own state government to give them the right to vote at 16 now.
Yep. Yeah, but shouldn't it be the same? Shouldn't it be the same then for every state? Like if, you know, California voters can vote at 16, shouldn't it be the same everywhere?
It should be. I think it should be consistent across the United States, whatever we decide that number to be.
I agree, because then it's not really fair.
No, exactly right. It all feels like manipulation of one sort or another, good or bad or left or right, but it just doesn't feel right, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No, that's what I thought this morning when I heard that. Then they get into the discussion of, well, you know, they can drive and they can this and they can that, and then we get into gun ownership and no gun, and then I said, well, where does it end? I mean, you've got to pick a one where we feel that the mind is mentally developed enough to be responsible enough, and that's a very subjective statement, and then establish what that number is. Let's say it's 18 or 21, and just stick with it. We can talk it to death otherwise.
I think it's all over the place, and I know that, like, drinking and marrying and all those ages, I think, vary from state to state. But I personally think it should be a national, based on a national thing, because it's all over the place right now. So, you know, you're old enough to join the military, to vote, and to get married, but maybe you can't. You're not even old enough to drink. That doesn't make any sense to me in some places.
No.
I don't want to be arrested, but I joined the military. I was signed up at 16, right? And so I literally walked on the military tarmac probably 8 to 10 days after I turned 17. But I was signed up. And so when you drink, you know, it's against the law. The military basically goes by the individual state that you're in. And during the time I joined, you had to be 21 to legally drink. But I can tell you that I did consume alcohol when I was 17 years old and even before I was 16.
Yeah, I did.
I don't want to be arrested and picked up, but and I can also tell you, as a leader in the military, as a leader, we would promulgate that you know we'd have these ship parties and ship picnics, and we'd promulgate to our people, because I put out what they call the plan of the day, which is the newsletter of what military things we're going to do this day. And we would always say, hey, you know, you have to be 21 in the state of Virginia, or whatever state we were in. It was 21 pretty much, except for New York and a few other places. And that only, but I would turn the other way if I saw a 17-year-old drinking. I would turn the other way. Now, if that 17-year-old was not conducting themselves in the manner that I thought was appropriate, then, of course, I would proceed to where the 17-year-old would take away their alcohol. And I may restrict them for the day. You know, I may say, you know, have somebody take them back to their living quarters or to another location to bring them away if their conduct was, you know. And I would forewarn them of that. So, but because it's really hard when you have young people and old people in the same grouping to not allow them to socialize. And so, yeah. So that's what I'd be responsible for that, of course. If something happened, I'd certainly be eligible to get in trouble. Yeah.
What do you guys though think of if you're asked at whatever age, 16, 17, whatever, at a age that you think normally would be too mature for either drinking or certain things? You're asked to serve our country and put your life literally on the line in some kind of combat situation. I think that kind of trumps everything else. You ought to be able to have as much as you might say, well, you know, a person that age isn't responsible enough. Well, you're going to put them in harm's way or her in harm's way to protect, shoot a weapon, and defend this country. They ought to, all the other things ought to go away, shouldn't they, or not? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think if you're old enough to serve in the military and you know, jeopardize your life, then in my mind, you're old enough to get married and you're old enough to drink.
Yep.
If that's what you meant. I think that's right. What you meant.
Yes, that's what I meant. I mean,
yeah.
Because, you know, otherwise don't put them in the service.
Exactly. Yeah.
Correct. I agree.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think the military, for me at least, they maintain pretty good supervision over my activities. Okay, so that was helpful as well. So you don't have you do those things you guys just agreed to, but you don't have an unlimited, you know, I'm an adult, I can do what I want to do attitude. That doesn't happen in the military anyway, because you can't carry that type of attitude. You have to do it within reason. Yeah.
Gentlemen, I have been listening to you, and I must admit, what a wonderful show you got going on.
I want
to agree that whenever you enlist in the service and put your life on the line, those age restrictions should be eliminated. I agree wholeheartedly. I second that amendment.
Otherwise, why are you making that person serve?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And by the way, you know, some of these young people that you're with, you may not see them the next day or the next hour. So you got to keep that in perspective, too. The party and the time you have together, the camaraderie you share may be your last opportunity. And I've had that misfortune as well, to see shipmates that weren't there the next day. And so I have a neighbor, I don't know if I tell you, my neighbor, when he's at sea, I always cut his grass and everything, and he always tries to pay me or something. I take no funds, because he was a launcher on an aircraft carrier, so that means he's the guy you see with the yellow shirt on, standing underneath the plane while the plane is being tossed off the flight deck. And look, I said, there's no way that you're going to ever be able to pay me, because I can only thank you for that job that you're doing, and I can only be thankful that I didn't have to do that job, okay? And it's a no-sweat job to him, but it's a very dangerous job. I agree with you 100%. And I think that a lot of people in the service probably do what I do and have done. There's very few people that hold strict reins to those policies that are required, but they have to be responsible for the outcome as well. How about the Iran nuclear agreement? Are you all up to speed on what's happening on that?
The latest was there was some bad words between the two sides. I don't think it was President Trump that said it, but somebody from our side and their side, and got the North Koreans a little upset, but I didn't get the impression that it was going to subterfuge the meeting or be that drastic. Did you hear more than that, Frank?
No, and I was specifically talking to the Iran deal. So the president has until the 12th of May to make, to either sign on again, saying that he agrees they're doing the right things, or walk away from it, right? So that's, if you notice, in the last couple of weeks, we had the president of France and the person who runs the United Kingdom, chancellor from Germany. They came over, and they say the reason why they came over was to encourage the president to remain in the deal. It's like a six-country deal, right? But I just wanted to see what you guys thought, whether the deal is important or not important. What, you know?
Hey, Frank, I'd like to weigh in on that.
Sure.
President Obama must have thought it was important, or else he would not have did what he did. We also had I think the Prime Minister of Israel or whatever they call him from Israel come in and say that it was not good. We had, as you stated, the two leaders from those two countries that you mentioned said that it was good. Now, if we do not expand upon or renew this agreement, then Iran will have the ability to go back to what they were doing before they did the settlement and got that money. So, I mean, come on. I think 45 is hell-bent on tearing up and doing away with everything that President Obama did during his 8 years of presidency. Some was good, some was a situation where it needed improvement. And you can't just take everything that a president did for 8 years and say everything was bad. I heard the part where you talked about Senator McCain, and I don't want to bring that up and stray away from what you just asked me, but I do believe that he was used by God to come in and on that floor at the last minute put a thumbs down, because you cannot undo everything that this man did in the past 8 years. I think that if we don't renew that, it's going to be a travesty again.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else?
I would just say, to me, the fact that the Chancellor of Germany and the President of France came over to the U.S. to talk to Trump, to talk him against getting out of the deal, to me, and the fact that Obama thought it was important, to me, that lends a lot more credence than Trump saying that he's going to get out of it, because I think, like you just said, who was it that just spoke? I'm sorry.
Don.
Yeah, thank you. Don, you just said, I think maybe I get the feeling that Trump is doing it just because it's something that Obama thought was the right thing to do. And that's not the right reason. You know, the chancellor and the president of France are two very bright people, two very powerful countries. And so I'm sorry, but I stand by their side on this one.
Any other thought or comments on that?
Yeah, Frank, this is Bruce.
Yes.
I would like to see it not totally thrown away, as Don said, but I would like it not to stay the way it is either. I would like to have some intelligence on whomever that comes from, whatever mouth that comes out of, that can somehow convince them that certain things need to change, that or improve or whatever, to make it an even stronger agreement. I think that the two parties, you know, the Democrats are don't want it trashed because they have their reason. The Republicans want to take it away. They have their reasons. Why does it have to be one extreme or the other? Why don't they try and take the agreement they have and make it stronger? I think that might be more palatable for the Iranians and the U.S. as far as the two together. And if it's an agreement to try and keep the lid on their proliferation of nuclear weapons, I'm all for that. So try to make some improvements to it. Don't trash it either way.
Okay,
Frank,
Bruce
just gave the ultimate answer. We don't need to take it away. We just need to improve upon it. One way of improving upon it and keeping it would be just add surprise inspections, where we have the right to go in and inspect any time we want. That's all you have to do.
That's right. And get past this. I think the Republicans might think, well, if we do that, then the Democrats get some of the credit. So They do. That's fine. And if we take it all out, then we get it all. It's not about the two parties. It's about trying to do the right thing and get
exactly.
our parties to say, you can both win in this regard. You don't have to one lose and the other win. They can both win. I mean, it's just frustrating.
Well, here's the other thing you guys should know. I think the reason why the current president is against it is because Iran, separate of nuclear issues, you know, is a big instigator in war fighting over in that the Middle East. Okay, so I think that's really the reason why he's all bent out of shape and everything, is because even though I think they're complying with the nuclear deal. And the nuclear deal is, he said it's like 5 years or something like that. He's absolutely
seven.
The president
seven does, more years.
Yeah, it's actually 25 years. Okay. It's 25 years. This deal is tied in for like 25 years. And there's different ratcheting in there. But the real deal is that because of that deal we have the right to go in there to inspect. Okay. And I don't know if you're aware that last week the Israelis gave a presentation in mid-afternoon in English, the prime minister, about
yeah.
the, okay, so that was meant for our consumption. And interestingly enough, today on the news, the former chief of Mossad, which is the intelligence agency, the lieutenant general who ran that for the Israelis, he's in a consortium of other generals who are concerned about the sovereignty, retaining the sovereignty of Israel, and they are for retaining this agreement, okay? They're a group of generals. It looks like there's 40 or more generals, and their consensus is that they want to retain the agreement and do something like you all recommended. Right there, but the agreement itself gives them the right to go in. And then one of them, the general of the random Assad, is nuclear, you know, he's nuclear trained in at the university level. The other interesting thing about that is they want a two-party state, because if they go to a one-party state, the Jewish state will not survive. Okay? So these generals are looking for a two-party state on the West Bank, so that they'll be in Israel, you know, and there will be a Palestine. And if they said, if you don't do that, then you won't have, we will no longer exist as a state.
Right.
So just a point.
Are these generals in conflict with the prime minister then? Or are they on the
yes,
same
they
page?
Are. Yeah. They, no, they're on that, they're on the opposite page.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're on the opposite page. They're basically saying the best thing to happen is to keep the agreement. And the
yeah.
prime minister, of course, has come and talked to our Congress and said, get out of the agreement. And like I said, there's probably 60 to 70 generals that are standing in a stadium-type thing, standing behind this guy who was the intelligence chief recently for the state.
And if you guys didn't get a chance to see that lesson that the prime minister did, you should watch it. It was quite something. What did they do? Did they have a raid and seized all that information? How did they come about getting
well,
all that information?
I'm told, and it's being told on TV that information is not as none of that information is not was all that information was known by the players that are involved in this agreement. So there's nothing new in that.
No.
Okay. So that's if you look at the
public airways, yeah.
it's just now coming out public, yeah. So that's they're well aware of what the Iranians' capability was, and they're aware that the Iranians were trying to make a weapon, were basically making a weapon, and the theory is if you do away with the agreement, they are going to make a weapon, you know, and because you have no. Other than the other, now you know General, Curry, the former Secretary of State, has also been negotiating in this process.
Yeah, what's that
so,
all about?
Why would he be a negotiator?
All right,
yeah.
Want to wrap it up?
Yeah, we got a minute. We got a minute, so we'll be wrapping it up. But the reason why he's in there is they say that's kosher. It's time to close out, guys.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful week. Happy Mother's Day. The next week we'll be doing Mother's Day.
All right, guys. Happy Mother's Day. Have a good week.
Yes.
You too.
Thank you all, and thank you, audience.
Yes?
Oh, you're still on, Mr. Bruce.
Who is this?
This is Spencer Shorter. I was running the show.
Oh.
For the day.
Yeah, yeah. Spencer, hi, Spencer. This is Bruce. Do you know how to shut it down?
Yes, I do. End the episode right now.